Welcome to the Conscient Conversations podcast. I'm Nigel Stevens, and in this podcast, I interview key people working in the data center, technology, and telecommunications industries. We discuss their stories and get their insights on the rapidly changing technology landscape. Well, welcome to Conscient Conversations podcast. Today, I'm joined by Jocelyn Pawley, who's a partner at Gowling WLG. Thanks for joining us today, Jocelyn. I appreciate you finding the time to talk to us. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Nigel.
Good, good. Before we start, do you want to give everyone a quick introduction of who you are and what your role is at Gowling?
Of course, absolutely. I am a partner in what we call our commercial IT and outsourcing team. So that is a team of lawyers who day to day look at contracts of all sorts but broadly for goods and services. And one of the sectors I support and I lead is the data center sector team here at Gowling. So that team pulls together lawyers from across the firm who have the skill sets that operators, lenders, suppliers, landlords in this sector need for the sector to work. So in my sector, I've got colleagues from real estate, construction, banking and finance, power, as well as my own commercial contracts team. And then if I'm actually doing work in the sector, then how I and where I fit in is looking at the agreements between the operators and the customers to provide the actual space, power, cooling and security services.
Okay, well, thank you. Thanks very much. You're obviously quite prominent and well known in the data center business. I certainly see you everywhere and everybody knows you very well. I think people are often very interested to hear how you got to where you are and what your journey is. So maybe you'd take a couple of minutes and tell us about that.
Sure, yes, I agree. I think I was always fascinated by that when I was a younger lawyer about how people end up where they end up, particularly in sectors like this, which aren't things that you ever hear about at school. I mean, even when I started doing the work, the partner I was working with had to explain to me what one was. As with many careers, I think it's something of an accident of being in the right place at the right time. I was a young lawyer in the commercial and technology team, and one of our real estate partners came wandering around one day, literally with a contract that he needed some support on, because it was really a pure commercial services contract, just in the context of the data centre. I must have had capacity and been a keen bean and put my hand up and said I'd help, and then he and I got on well together and just started working together more frequently, and it's really gone from there. He took me to the conferences with him, where, as you say, you build your network and get known by others in the sector, and I enjoyed the work, and I could see even then it was a niche area, niche in a good way, in that there were not a huge number of lawyers that were practicing in that space, and particularly the way the industry was changing, it was moving away from property-based agreements to being IT technical services agreements. So I could see the need for my skill set becoming more prominent. And so when that partner moved on, I became more embedded in the sector and have eventually worked up to leading it. And I'm certainly very glad that I did, seeing that it is now coming into its own as, you know, part of government conversations like these. It's much more in the public consciousness.
No, it really is so prominent. There was a time when we couldn't really talk about data centers because nobody knew what they were. So no, it's fantastic.
Exactly.
And it's you've come into a very male, middle-aged white male industry. I'm embarrassed to say, and as one myself, but how's that been, and what challenges have you had to sort of get over on the way?
You're right. I do remember the early days going to the conferences, looking around the room and thinking I'm probably one of the youngest people here, and I'm one of literally of a handful of women in the room. That is changing. It obviously takes time for lots of very valid reasons for that to change. There's still a lack of women in senior leadership positions, for sure. Although there certainly are some notable examples where women have got to those parts of the industry. And it's certainly the kind of vibe and the feel. It's a very friendly industry, and there's a lot of people who have known each other for a long time, because the industry really was spawned by a few very significant operators and skill sets, and then those people have gone off and started up their own businesses in a lot of cases. But the vibe is no longer sort of male domineering, if I can describe it like that. It's more professional, I think, and I hope I don't do anyone a disservice by saying that, but it certainly is more professional approach, which means everyone is approachable and you stand and fall by your credibility rather than anything else. But you're right, there is, for some people, that would have had a really big impact and would have been hard for them to make progress in the sector. Otherwise, I think the challenge is, as we were saying, it's actually breaking through the barrier of understanding what the sector is and what it does and how it works. Because certainly from a legal perspective, it is a blend of a real estate asset, all the leases and way leaves and things that need to sit behind a lease. But the value in that asset is the services it provides by way of the power, the technical infrastructure that's there to power servers that deliver cloud services. And that's not totally unique for a real estate asset to be valued in that way, but it is certainly much more unusual. And having those blend of things side by side, most leases do not have to come with a services agreement that has service levels in. So finding lawyers with the right skill sets who can work together and understand, I know enough about the property that I need to know, and I bring in my property colleagues, and equally they know that property well, but they understand when service levels become things that are not their skill set. So having the right people with the right collaborative approach to work together.
It's always interested me about why we actually need specialist legal services for data centers. What's and maybe it's true for all industries, but what's so unique about data centers that it requires sort of specialist legal help?
Well, as you say, I think most sectors benefit from specialist legal advice, because if you are advising on contracts or on investments or on how, what are the drivers of the different players in these contracts, what are they looking to get out of it, you need to understand the context of the sector to know what those issues are likely to be. Particularly the agreements I look at could be treated as a lease or a lease for services agreement or as a pure services agreement where the land element is a simple license, there's no proprietary rights. And understanding why you'd go for those different models and the pros and cons of each. As I said, it requires people with a blend of skill sets. Also, even for a technology lawyer like me, a data center agreement for co-location services looks nothing like any other technology agreement I ever look at. You know, there's no software involved for a start. There's actually no hardware involved either, because you're providing power and cooling infrastructure to a space, which then supports the servers, which support the digital services that are running on them. So certainly in the early days, when I've been acting for operators, I had examples of agreements where we sent off the standard terms for colo services. An IT lawyer looked at them on the other side and came back with all kind of inappropriate amends, talking about things like, well, where's your business continuity and disaster recovery plan? Why can't I have, you know, an RTO and RPO of 2 hours and 4 hours, and explain, well, I'm providing you physical space, so funnily enough, I don't have another data center down the road that I can just move you over to if there was a flood in this data center. So it's a lack of understanding about what these facilities were and what services they provided. And that's true if you had a property lawyer who sat here talking about leases between landlords and tenants for centre space. There are different things you need in those leases, given what's going to happen within the space, and it's being put to these kind of technical services. So that's why any old lawyer can write a contract, which will be legally binding and valid and deal with some of the main risks that travel across all agreements. But unless you understand the service, you are going to miss key clauses and key protections, which just mean it's not a well-advised agreement.
Yeah, no, well, thanks very much for that. And it's, as I say, it's not always apparent to people why that stuff is the case. You mentioned that we were in a very exciting time in the data center industry, and I'd absolutely agree with that. What's your view of what's happening and where things are going next?
So I think it's not the first time the data center industry has seen this sort of peak of excitement and explosive growth, winding back, oh, I don't know, 10 years when cloud computing not came on the scene, but when it became apparent it was going to be the modern architecture of choice for all kinds of core business systems. That was when everyone got excited, because clearly you need the data centers to support that kind of growth. So I was a historian originally, so you very much look at things over time. And to me, the excitement and growth we're seeing now, we have seen it before. It's just people often conveniently forget what happened a decade ago. I think what might be different this time is the sheer scale of it and the geographical reach, because we're now going from quite a high base, if you like, but to something that's still exponentially greater again. and the amount of money that's going into it, because data center builds and operation has become more expensive over time. It's also become obviously imminently more powerful and more resilient and all those good things as well, but it has become more expensive. So then when we say, well, we actually need a load more of it, the money just inflates again. So that is certainly a change, the amount of money, and that then drives other changes, like the number of people that are interested in it and the spectrum of people who are now coming to the data center sector. Now, if you look to the investment community, you've previously had quite specialist data center investors. You are now getting a much broader pool of digital infra funds, traditional banks, local authorities, sovereign wealth funds, pension funds, because everyone is looking at the figures involved, the potential returns, and how core this service is now to a digital economy. So if you're looking at a safe place to invest money, this is something that the need for it is not going to fall away. There is certainly a bit of a gamble being taken by some of the big hyperscalers at the moment about how much AI we are going to use and is going to become embedded, which is leading to a lot of excitement, but also I think a level of skepticism about will all the capacity that is being planned and people are building into their roadmaps, will it all come to fruition? You know, we're relying on AI, finding all the practical use cases that people hope that it will.
And does this degree of change, do you think, does that present different legal challenges as well? Is it throwing up different things, or is it just scale?
No, I think it is actually throwing up different things. You're right. And interestingly, they're political. So if you look to the Gulf, for example, in the UAE, the governments there, each of them in their technology plans and roadmaps and visions for their countries over the next 10, 20, 30 years, not just technology, but data centers feature very heavily. So there's a government will, which means land will be available, power will be available, there'll be funding and incentives for people to go to those areas and build. In the UK, this government over the last 7-8 months, they have had calling in of previous planning rejections. So the facility in Buckinghamshire will go ahead. We've seen data centres being designated as critical national infrastructure, so recognising the role they play in security and resilience and supporting of the digital economy. And we've just the AI action plan specifically references the needs to build data centres in this country. And then just yesterday, the announcement about potentially making it easier to build nuclear energy facilities in this country. Not a direct link to data centres, but it is a live conversation in the industry about could that be the answer to the power needs of the industry if it's going to grow that much. So, yes, I think it's not just growth and it's bigger. There are additional factors at play, which are partly being driven by the fact that there's a lot of need for the IT services that the industry supports.
Well, that's probably a very good segue, actually, into sustainability, because I think maybe data centers are getting a bit of a bad name at the moment. And how do you think that's affecting the industry, and maybe how it's affecting the legal profession?
Do you know, I think we might actually be about a tipping point in terms of public perception in data centres. I totally agree with you that the industry, I don't think it's done a great job historically of promoting a positive view and giving the positive stories to the services that they facilitate and enable, you know, watching your Netflix, doing your online banking, checking your train times, buying your train tickets, all of that is facilitated by the servers that sit in these data centres. Yet what has tended to surface in the public has been the percentage of electricity in Ireland that is consumed by a data centre without people understanding what that data centre actually does. They just see it as something sucking power away from them rather than the positive sides of what it provides. And because facilities, once they are built, there aren't vast numbers of employment opportunities. They do bring employment opportunities, but you're not talking thousands of people to operate these facilities. So there has, say, in the public consciousness, there have been the negative stories without the positive. I think it feels like that is starting to change. And that's being driven partly, I think, by the industry starting to be a little more open about what it is they do provide and what they do. But also I think as the government rhetoric around it changes as well to encouraging, and the sustainability is bound up in that, because we are all as a country, as a culture, much more aware of thinking about what's the sustainability impact. And if you talk to the sector about it, they're very aware of it. It puts the operators in a slightly funny position, because they build a facility, they procure power, they don't use that power, the power is used by the customers within the facility. So they just enable it and facilitate it and obviously make it technically reliable and certain and stable. But they aren't the actual end consumers and users of that power, it's the customers. So really what's driving a lot of the sustainability agenda is the biggest customers of those data centres, who are the hyperscalers, and they have been very public about the targets and goals they're setting to achieve net zero by certain dates. So it's then coming to the data centre community and saying, we need space in your facilities, but one of our requirements is we have renewable power being delivered to that facility. So that is driving the conversation.
Yeah, no, fantastic, fantastic. I mean, the other thing that's also driving all this is AI, and we're probably as an industry, we're super excited about it because it's driving tremendous growth and scale at things that we've never seen before. There's obviously concern about AI, on the other hand, about the safety of AI and probably even maybe even government intervention could be with some of these things. Do you think that's got any? Is it think that's going to have an effect on the industry as we go forward? Could there be restrictions about what it's used for? Would there be anything that would affect the data center industry itself, do you think?
You're right, there's a huge question mark about the regulation of AI in the UK, particularly given the EU has set its standard and we have an EU AI Act, and you can see the level of compliance and diligence that is required to achieve compliance with the EU AI Act. UK government may legislate still, but it's going to look different to EU AI Act. So how would that trickle down and affect the data centre community? I think the only potential effect on them from a compliance point of view could be security. And you already see the data centre community being affected by security concerns by things like the material outsourcing regime for financial institutions in the UK, which has been around for some time. DORA, the Digital Operation Resilience Act, which came into force in the EU just last month, which again is talking about security of ICT services to financial institutions. So you're already seeing those kinds of impacts on the sector anyway. So AI would just be another element of that. Where I think AI is already having the far bigger impact on the sector is it's affecting the physical design of these spaces. The AI chips are far more power hungry and power intensive than previous chips. So you're creating racks with far greater kilowatt capacities, which means you have hotspots, which means you need to change your cooling infrastructure, and actually using direct chip liquid cooling, which is not the standard cooling design used in most data centers. And it's more expensive. So I think that is the impact that AI is having, the how the technology and the tech stack supports a particular design has actually come all the way down to chip and data center level, which is not something you'd really seen before. You'd seen, you know, Linux optimized servers for running Linux operating systems, but that didn't affect the infrastructure, the power and the cooling around it, but we are now seeing that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you. I think that's also another good platform to talk about. Where do you think we're going next? So, you know, if you'd have asked me that question 3 years ago, I probably wouldn't have predicted what we've actually got. So I know it's very hard. But you know, what do you think is going to happen?
In my crystal ball. So we're already seeing, I think, the diversification or stratification of the industry. You know, a data center is not a data center, a data center. We're definitely seeing an AI is a great example of this. Yep. Data centers being built around a specific use case. Or customer segment. So are you designing an edge data center, which is a much smaller site, closer to where the services that it's providing are being consumed, where you need real time, very low latency because you're running live systems in hospitals where people are having operations or traffic management systems or something like that? Or are you designing a facility to support AI training, which could be based miles and miles away? Latency is not an issue at all, You just need that amount of power. You can run it maybe at night when electricity is cheaper. So that who is your customer base? What's the business model you're setting up is diverging much more significantly than we've seen in the past. Because there are some operators now who maybe started with a mainly enterprise colo customer base, have moved into serving the hyperscalers more. Hyperscalers have different and much more specific technical designs for those facilities. So trying to run a facility that supports your enterprise customer and your hyperscaler becoming increasingly difficult. So I think that kind of diversification and stratification will become more and more pronounced. Businesses will have to make a clear decision, which affects, of course, their investment as well and their ability to draw capital as to what market they're aiming at.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. I couldn't agree more, actually. So returning to you a little bit then, looking back, what's your proudest achievement?
Oh, that's always a good question.
Looking back, what's your proudest achievement to date?
So I think as a lawyer, the most satisfaction I get is when you've developed a really strong relationship with your client. You've worked with them through thick and thin. You've done the deals with them late at night. You've negotiated the difficult points. You've helped them develop their thinking. And you see their business grow and you see their business succeed. And it's a great feeling to know that you've contributed to that and been part of it. A lot of what a lawyer does, you know, you could boil it down to pushing paper around and playing with words, but to see a business come to life and be recognised within their own industry for their achievements is great. So my example is I've worked with Virtus for over 10 years now, right from when they had their first two sites, and now they're up to, I think, 14 operating sites in the UK. So to have understood their journey, being able to see them grow and the different issues that they have worked their way through to get to where they are today, it brings a lot of satisfaction for me.
No, brilliant. Well, thank you. Thank you. I think finally, we haven't talked too much about the firm that you work for, Gowling. What is your firm doing to address the sort of current and future needs of the data center industry?
Great question, because we want to be there to support clients in this space. So there's definitely a recognition that good advice is increasingly multidisciplinary. So I talked already about how from even a long time ago in the sector, you needed to have that right blend of real estate and IT support. Now I think the needs of the business grow more complex. You've mentioned sustainability, and procuring power is a significant part of achieving those sustainability requirements. So we're working more closely with my colleagues in our power specialist team. We are moving our sector group closer to our broader digital infra sector, because as I said earlier, the digital infra funds are more interested in data centres. So there's a bit of upskilling on both sides needed there. So we understand where they're coming from and they understand more about the sector. The broader banking colleagues who support those deals and some of the private equity as well. So we are making sure that all the right people with the necessary skills are informed about what's going on and they understand some of the history to, you know, fast forward them and bring them up to speed on things that I've lived through for the last 10 years, but that hasn't been on their consciousness because they've not been in the sector, to make sure we all speak the language and are providing the right sort of advice.
Yeah, no, brilliant. Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, I think that's everything I was going to talk to you about today. Thank you so much for spending the time. Anything else you'd like to share before we sign off?
Always like a good trip around the data center. Anyone got one out? Anyone offering trips around?
Okay, well, there you are. That's a challenge for anybody listening. If there's a data center Jocelyn hasn't been to, she's up for a trip. Well, thanks again very much and all the best.
You're very welcome. Thanks very much, Nigel. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.